recovery, getting free from addictions, whether it's drugs, alcohol, food, anything. It's something that a lot of guys struggle with, and it's something a lot of guys need help with. I talked to two guys today, Marcus and Adam, and they're going to share their story of how they got free on the Manlyhood Mancast.
Men, nobody but you can lead your family and yourself to greater things. Nobody but you can carve your path. It's time to rise up and be a man. Welcome to the Manlyhood Mancast with Josh Hatcher.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Manlyhood Mancast. I'm your host, Josh Hatcher. And I have really been happy to see the way that you guys have been interacting with the posts that we're doing, the way that you're watching the short form videos that we're putting out on Instagram and on YouTube and on TikTok and Facebook. And I really appreciate that you guys are tuning into the show each week. There is some really good stuff. So whether you listen on Apple or whether you listen on Spotify or whether you watch on YouTube, I want you to do me a favor and make sure that you leave us a rating or a review or comment or share the video with somebody so that we can continue to help manlyhood grow. Don't forget, guys, if you want to be a part of what's happening here at Manlyhood, you can do that in the Manlyhood Man Cave. Also, really quick, I just want to let you know, let me talk to you about our sponsor really quick. So Grand River Agency is the company that I work for, and we do marketing. So whether you need graphic design or website design, whether you're a small business or a nonprofit, we can help you. We can help you with that. You can see the work I can do because you see the work I'm doing here for Manlyhood. We can do that for you. If you've got a podcast that you want to produce and you need some help with that, if you have a business and you need help managing your social media content or you need a new website or a new logo, let us know. We'd be happy to help you. The website is grandriver.agency, so check it out. Guys, before we get into today's interview with Marcus Waters and Adam Anderson, these guys have been my friends for a little while. These guys have been working through and conquering some demons, and it's been a powerful experience to watch them grow and to watch them overcome this and then to invest back into the lives of other people. You know, I do believe the healing is in the helping, and these guys have made it their life's mission to help other people get free too, and I think that's awesome. But the truth is, we've all got hang-ups, and we've all got struggles. Maybe they're not all addictions, but for a lot of us, they are. And these guys talk about how they got free. And if you're listening to this today, and you've got a hang-up that's really just kicking your tail, you don't have to live that way. You don't have to stay that way. So I'm hoping that today's episode can encourage you to break out and to get some help and to admit that you're powerless and that you need some help with this. I also want to let you know, guys, this episode, shortly after we recorded it, Marcus's mother passed away. I got to meet her this summer at his wedding, and she was so proud of him. She's a good lady, and she loved him. And so this episode, I don't usually dedicate an episode, but this episode is dedicated to Marcus's mom. Without further ado, Marcus Waters and Adam Anderson. Marcus, Adam, it's good to see you guys. Thank you guys for joining us on the Manlyhood Mancast.
Thanks for having us here.
You guys are one of the few guys who've actually been able to record in the studio. Most of the time my guests are far away, so it's kind of fun to actually have somebody in the man cave with me today. So thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks
for having me. So the reason I wanted to have you guys in, you know, a lot of my guests are, you know, they're authors or they're somebody with, you know, like a big, huge, major accomplishment that the world sees. And they're like, you know, like, oh, this, you know, like you guys aren't, you know, guys don't have a television show, you guys, you know, but
yet,
right. But the reason I invited you guys is because I think that your story and you guys in the journey that you guys have been through is just as inspiring as the guy that wrote the best-selling book. And I think that, like, when I see the way that you guys interact with each other and I hear your story and I see the things you guys have been through and we just have conversations and, you know,
shoot the bull and you guys have really, you know, there's a depth that I think would be, is worth bringing on the show and talking about with you guys. So that's why I invited you, and I'm really glad you guys could be here. So
thanks.
So
very appreciated.
So, Marcus, let's start with you a little bit here. So I know that, you know, the way that, I got to know both of you guys was through church, and you guys kind of got plugged into that as a part of your recovery process. Mm-hmm. So before I met you, there was a whole big long story for both of you before you guys ever came into the picture, you know, before we ever connected. And in that story, I know that a lot of guys that might be listening may be in the middle of that. And so maybe could you tell me about how you got to that place where you were like, all right, I need to get clean, but I wasn't before.
Yeah. You know, I don't really like talking about the before too much. You know, just because it's been done, and I was taught in recovery that, I mean, although we are unique in God's eyes, our stories are really not that unique. But I guess I'll share a little bit to qualify on, you know, how I got into recovery. My addiction started pretty much like, you know, any other drug addict story, with a solo cup and a blunt after, you know, school one day or after a football game. And, you know, I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it to the point where I wanted to just go down a road where, you know, self-destruction, dereliction caused my parents, my family, a lot of heartache. Pretty much anybody who came into contact with me was, you know, in danger of some sort, you know, getting robbed, you know, what have you. And, you know, I got to a point where I just pushed everybody else out of my life. I didn't have anybody else. I didn't have anywhere else to turn to. I checked myself in rehab for like the fourth time. And from that point, I actually understood what surrender was. You know, I tried every other avenue that there was. You know, we as drug addicts were pretty semi-intelligent to the point where we can, you know, survive at very least. And, you know, when I got to that point where it was just me and, you know, all of my choices up until that point, I didn't have no other choice but to surrender. You know, my addiction took me to a place of suicide. And I remember that night, and I went and copped for my dealer and went down to a spot where I didn't think anybody would find me, and, you know, made up my shot and hit the plunger. And by the grace of God, and a couple good policemen and a good Samaritan who have no idea who it was that happened to call the police on me, and they found me, revived me, and, you know, got myself in rehab. And, you know, from that point, I was trying to get into a long-term facility in Jamestown, New York, and I tried for like, you know, months, and I wasn't able to get in. And my counselor came up to me one day and was like, Spirit of the Network Ministries, Brad from Pennsylvania. And I was like, Pennsylvania. All right. Well, that's one state that I haven't screwed up completely yet. So sure, let's go. You know, and the rest is history. I got in recovery. I met Adam and a wonderful group of men and women that are in recovery here in Bradford. And, you know, they loved me until I could love myself. And yeah, and my life is greater today than I could have ever imagined. I'm married. I have a wonderful stepdaughter. My parents allow me home for Christmases, and they actually want me to be there. And I have a church family. I have a family in the rooms of NA and AA, and very grateful for that, because I wouldn't be here talking.
Awesome. So
that's just a little tidbit.
Yeah.
A snippet.
So how about you, Adam? What's your story like?
Mine isn't that much different. You know, my first drink and first drug use was 12, and it just snowballed from there. And I remember that first beer I ever drank, I actually looked at my friends and said, I'm never going to live without this again. I went to rehab at 22. I ended up coming out here for college. Turned out that didn't work out very well. Hard to balance those two things. And I didn't end up getting sober till 24. Between 22 and 24, I just kind of bounced around. I was homeless a lot. And something finally snapped that last time, and I decided I was getting my life together.
When you were, if you don't mind me asking, when you were homeless, were you like on the street? Were you couch surfing? What was that like?
Both.
Both? Yeah. Just wherever you could find a spot?
Yep.
So you guys met in rehab or met at the, in the recovery home, or where was it you guys connected? We met in the rooms. In the rooms?
Yeah, I had about 4 years sober when I met you.
I had about 3 days.
Yeah.
Wow. So when you say the rooms, that is kind of the code word, right, for the meetings for NA and Alcoholics Anonymous, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you had 4 years when you met him and you had about 3 days. Okay, so let's talk about that recovery process itself. So like I know that there's 12 steps.
Yeah.
I know that one of them is something about being powerless. And then one of them is about making amends.
That's nine.
And that's nine?
You went from one to nine.
Yeah. I don't know. Just, and I should, right? Actually, honestly, to be completely blunt with you, I've been thinking a lot about taking that recovery mindset and applying it to my struggle with food. And I know there's like an Overeaters Anonymous and there's meetings that can go online.
There's over 220 different kinds of anonymouses.
Yeah. And so like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, I need to learn this stuff and apply it to my own life. Cause everything that I've seen, that I've read, that, you know, the concepts work and they make sense. So maybe you guys could talk to me. I mean, we don't have to necessarily go through all 12 steps today. I mean, we could, but you know, I mean, it's taken a long time for you guys to go through all that, right?
The 12 rules of life.
Yeah. So tell me about the process. Like, what does the recovery process look like?
You want to go first? You want me to?
Sure. I mean, I think every recovery journey is different and it is unique, you know, because there's like different levels of the rock bottom for everybody. And so I think it's very difficult to gauge where, you know, like if someone could hear my story and say, okay, you know, like it's not that bad yet, you know, and I think that's the lies we feed ourselves as addicts. Like it's not that bad yet, you know. And so I think the recovery process looks different for everybody. You know, mine was complete and utter desperation, and I know Adam's was too, but, you know, I mean, it speaks to myself, but, you know, complete and utter desperation, you know, powerlessness. So that's where it started from.
Yeah, so I think ultimately it starts at step one. We admitted we were powerless. A lot of it become unmanageable. There's an actual piece in there. You know, for me, it was, I went to rehab at 22. I read this book. This book made some sense to me, but I didn't quite know if I had those characteristics or if I had those traits, right? Like, I didn't know that I had this allergy. I didn't know that I had this obsession. And so I talked myself in and out of it for a long time. And so when I finally hit like 24 and had been homeless through that time frame, and, you know, I was watching all my friends get married and like get good jobs, and I found myself lost. So that was that powerlessness piece was pretty easy to understand in that moment. And then once I had finally gotten sober for, I think it was like 3 to 6 months, I could really understand that unmanageability piece, right? Because I look back at my life, the whole thing was chaos up until that moment. Right. And so I didn't know what manageability was until I was on the other side of it. Then looking back at it, I was able to be like, oh, that's what they mean. Yes, that's just a short little snippet on step one.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that might be so, like, I know a lot of guys who, you know, I mean, we met them through church. I know a lot of other guys, and I know that honestly is that first hang up, right? Like, I got this. I can stop anytime I want, you know? Mm-hmm. And the truth is, if you could, then you would.
Right.
Right.
Cause no one wants to live like that. The truth is, like, again, at 12, I didn't know how horrible the next 12 years of my life were going to be, you know, and how difficult they would be and how much I was going to screw up. What you live, you learn.
And I think addiction is a very slippery slope. You know, it definitely starts out as fun on the weekend, and, you know, that next thing you know, weekend turns into Monday, and, you know, next thing you know, your Thursday is Friday, and, you know, all your weeks are together, and I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be a drug addict, I want to wake up in the morning and stick a needle in my arm so I can start my day. You know, I don't think that, you know, it's any addict's wish to wake up in the morning and say, I want to disrespect my parents today, I want to hurt my parents, or I want to hurt my sister, or I want to hurt my brother, and, you know, I want to destroy my family unit. I don't think anybody, you know, starts out that way, but it's very slippery slope to get to that. And you don't see it until it's right on top of you.
So we get to the part of your story where you guys have connected, and that's in the rooms, right? That's in the meetings. What difference does it make when you build that kind of friendship? And what was your friendship like when you first started? Like, did you guys immediately connect? Did you like, okay, like this guy's just another, you know, how did that work? What was that like?
Well, I asked Adam to sponsor me.
Yeah.
When I came to Bradford, you know, and I think that's an interesting process too, you know, like, it's kind of like, you know, like way back in high school and like, you know, you're just in that awkward stage as like a teenager and like, you know, you want to ask this girl out to a dance or something. And like, you're just so nervous about it because like, you're just unsure of yourself. And it's kind of similar to that, I
think, you know. To ask somebody to sponsor you?
To ask for help in general, but yeah.
What does the sponsorship process look like? Like, what is expected of you if you're a sponsor?
My only job as a sponsor ever is to get someone through the steps. Like, I'm not a bank. I'm not your taxi. Not, you know what I mean? The only responsibility I have in that is to get you through the steps. And whatever comes from that, comes from that. Obviously, we've developed a very good friendship. It's hard not to, when you learn everything about someone, in the manner and the depth in which I was taught how to do the steps, it's hard not to become very close.
So the learn everything about somebody, that's something that's, I think that's something that we as men have a hard time with, right? Like, I think probably the person I'm closest with anybody in the entire world is my wife. Mm-hmm. And there are times when I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that I want to, it's not that I have anything to hide, right?
It's just hard to be vulnerable with other human beings. Like, it's a super difficult thing to do, especially for, you know, drug addict, or honestly, just human beings in general. The fallacy is that if I become vulnerable with you, you can hurt me with it. But the truth is, most human beings I've ever been vulnerable with and asked for help have been more than willing to help me. Mm-hmm.
I have definitely been hurt by people that I trusted.
Well, and you will.
And so that is, I think, maybe part of why some of those, even from my wife, right? Mm-hmm. That's why those walls come up, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And you will. The difference is, am I willing to get hurt by this person? Right? Do I love them enough that their unintentional suffering that they cause me is worth it? Hmm. Because the truth is, if I say I love you, what I'm saying is I will never intentionally hurt you.
Then if they do intentionally hurt you, then you just have to work through forgiveness.
and setting up boundaries.
Right.
And, you know, the whys and the hows and the whos and...
So the sponsorship process. So you asked him to be your sponsor, mm-hmm. and he said yes right away. Or was he like, I don't know, man, I don't think you're ready for this. What was that like?
Well, he just told me to pray about it. That was just, mm-hmm. and we talked about it. I think the next day or the day after, and, mm-hmm. we you know, made a meetup point and you know, kind of just went from there. That was the next step. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then let's say that I'm ready to go through the steps and I have a sponsor. What does that process look like? So you have a meetup point, you have...
So that's different.
That's different for each person?
Depending on your sponsor, your lineage. So we might get some flack for this, but I use some Back to the Basics from one fellowship and then use the original principles from the other.
I like to call it by extension.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. So basically, it goes through the book for one piece of it, mm-hmm. and then we're practicing a principle that goes along with each step along the way.
So that really just depends on the organization you're in and how the sponsor thinks it's going to work best.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you get into recovery or you're thinking about wanting to get a sponsor or something like that, I think it's important to note that you find somebody that has something that you want. Mm-hmm. And just start out with simple stuff. And, like, you know, most people, I mean, sure, there's guys around the mains that flex and Mercedes and, like, whatever. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, mm-hmm. you know, but, like, it's more about fixing the inside. So find somebody that, you know, has something that you want, and believe in that person is close with God. And that way, you know, it's a closer connection for you. If, you know, somebody's not walking in spiritual step, or, you know, they may have some other, like, worldly issues going on or whatever, you don't need that person enough to leave. But I suggest taking your time out and, you know, kind of thinking about who you want to do life with. Because ultimately, that's what you're doing.
So how often did you guys meet when you were going through that process? How, like, did you guys communicate every day? Did you meet once a week?
Yeah. Especially in the beginning. You very much want to communicate on a regular basis. In my experience, sponsoring people, you need to get to know them, right? And part of that is you calling me when you have a good day, me calling my sponsor when I have a good day, me calling my sponsor when I have a bad day, and everything in between, right? Because that's how you connect, and that's how you grow. And it also shows patterns of behavior over time.
So how long, like from that point when you guys entered that relationship, did you guys feel like friends right away, or did it take time to really develop that trust with each other?
Maybe it takes time. I think it takes time. I mean, I get the pleasure and opportunity to be a sponsor today to other men. So now I get to, you know, kind of share that and see what that looks like on the other end. And, you know, I think that, you know, it takes time to cultivate those relationships with other people in general. And I think, you know, when you come into somewhere and have this whole bunch of baggage and character defects and lies and manipulation and things that were survival skills and all of ways of being, I think that, you know, it takes time. It takes time to dump that crap off and, you know, move forward and get closer with God and, you know, start walking in step and, living an honest life.
So did he give you the lines of BS at first? Did it take a while for that to bust off of him? And how did you navigate that?
Do you mean Marcus giving me lines of BS?
Yeah.
So without giving too much away.
Right, because this is anonymous, right?
With practicing honesty, I don't remember the exact story, but I remember I made him practice honesty for an extra week because he lied to me.
Well, I don't know if I lied.
I don't think it was a direct lie, but it was like some variance.
Well, so I know the story.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
So I was, I got in recovery. I was on food stamps and stuff and government assistance. And so I walked into Walmart and, you know, I cashed out. I had bought some hydroxycut, you know, getting recovery, which I looked good. I'm going to the gym, you know, I'm feeling good. And so I walked out and I had the hydroxycut. I'm like, dude, Walmart just gave me this for free. And he's like, dude, we're at Walmart. Nothing's free. He's like, go back in there and tell the clerk that, you know, you didn't pay for this out. So, but, like, she didn't do her job. You know, like, that's,
yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, I was going to pay, but, like, she didn't do her job, so it's her fault. So I ended up going back in there, and I was like, hey, you know, like, just didn't get scanned or whatever. And, you know, maybe some paperwork. And so I expected, like, to take a parade, and, like, everybody would be like, oh, my gosh, she's so honest, you know. And this lady was just like, yeah, like, you can use the self-checkout over there if you want to, like, pay for it. And, like, but, yeah, cool, thanks for being honest. And I'm like, all right. So this is the way it's going to be. But God gives you opportunities to work on things. And it was, like, a couple weeks later, and I was clothes shopping up in Olean. I was with my parents because I also didn't have a car or anything. So people had to drive me around. And so I was up there with them. And this guy, I had like three items, and the guy didn't scan one of the items. And so I had to go by myself on my own volition and be like, hey, you know. But the thing about it is, it's a lesson in, like, if you don't pay for these things, or if you don't pay your way, like, every time you look at that item, you didn't pay for it, you stole it, like, whatever. You got to think about it. You know, I mean, is it, like, is it really worth it if you're trying to live a better way of life?
So hence, didn't need to practice honesty. It was pretty instilled. You know?
That's awesome.
God has a good way of leading us through those things.
Yeah. Yeah, that integrity, that, I mean, fearless integrity, right, that you've got to have, like, it's very easy to just not tell the whole truth. And then what I am noticing is I can lie to myself too, you know?
I don't think it's about fearlessness. I think it's about knowing what happens if I don't. It's not about fearlessness. It's about knowing what happens if I'm not honest.
Having conscience.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't have one of those for a really long time. So,
I mean, like, I've had plenty of conversations with bosses, the fiance, plenty of people, sponsees, sponsors, that, you know, I walked into that conversation very, you know, scared. But I knew the repercussions of not being honest.
Everything is like that, right, though? It's always, which costs more?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to cost more to hold on to that. Especially, like, if you're coming out of a lifestyle that is where you guys came out of, right? Yeah. Like, one step back could be a big step back, right? You know?
I'll die.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
It's not a big step. I will die. Mm-hmm. That's that. Whether it's 6 months, a year, 2 years, 10 years, it's death. Mm-hmm. And the whole way there, I'm going to wish I was dead.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that. Well, let me say that some guys want that. You wanted that when you started. Mm-hmm. You're like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I know.
Well, it's a death is an easy escape at that point, right? When you're done, when you don't know any other way to live, death's just an easy escape.
Or it sounds like an easy escape. Like, we have a belief framework that tells us that it might not be an easy escape, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that death isn't the end, and that there is something on the other side. And so we don't want to.
Now.
Yeah, okay. Now we know that. Now we know that. Yeah. So, which, you know, kind of begs the question, because I know that, you know, like, when you look at suicide rates, right? Like, men are more likely, like, ridiculously more likely to commit suicide than anybody else. So, you know, I guarantee you that somebody listening to this podcast has tossed that question around in their head today, you know?
Well, the reason why men are more successful at it is because we're willing to choose more violent means to complete it. And the rates are so high because I personally, as a man, know that thought has not crossed my mind since I've found a purpose to continue existing. I think, not to dig too deep into the women versus men thing or anything, I'm not saying, but, like, you know, women have made all the humans in the world, right? They have a purpose, make more humans. Men, we have to find that. You know, when we were cavemen, it was going to get the food. Right. And so in this day and age, what's altered is, how do we go get the food? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think when it comes to purpose too, like, we crave it and we desperately want to find it, you know? And I honestly think purpose is a simpler thing, right? Like the reason that you exist, I think, is the reason that everybody exists. Now your mission, that can change too. Like your mission right now, your mission is to help people out of addiction, you know?
You know? It's just to be here in this moment.
Yeah. And that is where I think there's this joy when you recognize and realize like your existence is, I think you're the reason you exist, right? That's your purpose. The reason you exist is to have a relationship with God who loves you. Like, not just like, not like, like likes you or tolerates you.
It's unconditional.
Like loves you.
It's unconditional.
And then part of that purpose is then to reflect that so that other people can find it. You know, that's, I mean, you know, I know not all of our listeners are Christian and some might be like, whatever, but dude, I'm telling you what, my life completely drastically changed when I figured that out, you know?
Yeah, so step three, this part in some of our literature that talks about all God has to be is unconditionally loving, caring, and greater than your disease. And I spent a lot of time in those 4 years before I met Marcus studying a bunch of different religions and trying to figure out what God was, which, looking back at it, it's really, really a dumb thing to do. But what I found is when I threw out all that other information and just went with those three basic ideas, everything started clicking. And I just really leaned into that idea that God's unconditionally loving, so God knows more about me than I know about myself. Caring, for anyone who has kids, I know, like my stepdaughter, I want what's best for her. So God wants that for me. And greater than my disease means I never have to go back to the way that I was.
You use the word disease, which I think brings up an interesting discussion and a question that I think a lot of people have had about recovery, about addiction. Is it a disease? What does that mean? Help me out with this.
Or is it a choice? Yeah.
Or is it both, maybe? Yeah. But is it like why do we say it's a disease?
So, because it's progressive, incurable, and fatal, right? And those are the three things that define what a disease is. Yeah. And it's hard to say that one disease is worse than the next. And, you know, you see people, why is Narcan free and why diabetes medicine? And I got the same questions. You know what I mean? Like, my mom's diabetic. I mean, she's got to buy the medicine. So it's one of those things where I think in my experience, what has happened over time is that the stigma of addiction and what goes along with that, the lying, the thievery, the stealing, the manipulation, the spiritual malady that goes along with the disease, I think is looked at instead of the disease itself, which is the human being. Right? And like I said earlier, like, I don't think anybody wants to wake up in the morning and have to steal money out of your mom's purse to go get fixed. Right. And so like that's the spiritual malady. But the disease part is the fact that, you know, you're going to keep consuming more and more and more that substance until it eventually killed, whether you like it or not. So, you know, it's a difficult question, and I think it's a very complicated answer.
I think the short and the long of it for me is always it's listed in the DSM-5 for a reason.
Do you think that, this is going to be a weird question, but I think you'll get it. Do you think you're born an addict?
I think so, yeah. I think it's genetic. And I think that in the beginning, it is a choice. There may be addicts out there that were so terrified to pick up a substance or just so devout that they never wanted to pick up a substance. And, you know, maybe those people just never had to have that experience, you know, to get to that point of recovery. But I think there is a genetic predisposition for people that have certain things. When they do ingest a substance in their body, that it creates a reaction inside of you that's different than an average person.
They did a study of 200 people living on Skid Row, They gave them a shot of alcohol and then did an MRI scan on their brain. All 200 of them said they were an alcoholic or a drug addict. And what they found was roughly 190 of them, the brain scan revealed 10 times the dopamine released in their brain from that one shot of alcohol than what the normal person's brain gets.
So that could be something.
That's why you obsess about it.
Right.
That's the allergy piece. The chemical, you know, induction of dopamine is the allergy piece. Because clearly the body's not supposed to react that way. And then the obsession comes from, man, that felt good.
Well, and I don't think we're talking about the real gateway drug, which is trauma, right? There's things that have happened in Daniel's book. Yeah. There's things that have happened in our childhood that, you know, maybe that nobody else in the society of norms has experienced. And so finding that in the rooms, finding that in a recovery group or your church or something like that, you know, you'll probably find people like that there that can share in their trauma with you and sharing that sadness.
Well, so let's talk about that for trauma for a second. So a lot of people don't like the word trauma because they just think of like, oh, the deep, hard, you know, like I wasn't sexually abused. I have trauma. You know, well, first of all, 1 in 5 boys before the age of 18 is sexually abused. That's a lot of boys.
I didn't know that. Wow.
And that's the ones that come forward and talk about it. Cause a lot of people never admit it or talk to about it with anybody. 1 in 5.
Yeah.
So 1 in 5 men that you see walking around, 20%. Mm-hmm. Had sexual abuse when they were a kid. That doesn't include physical abuse or neglect. That doesn't include bullying. I mean, gosh, everybody is bullied in one way or another when they're a kid. You want to talk about trauma? You know what I mean? You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, even things just as simple as, you know, maybe your family has to move from one place to another, or maybe you grew up in poverty. And I think like that's like 20% of the population there, you know? And so all of those things are things that in your adult life, they affect your decision-making.
Yeah, I went to 28 funerals by the time I was 19. Witnessed some things along the way, obviously, that a child shouldn't see. I had to grow up young. Well, I shouldn't word it that way. I chose to grow. My grandparents did take very good care of me. I lost a lot of things from that. I was unwilling to connect to other human beings, realistically, because I always thought, like, I'm the next one. You know, every 6 months you're going to the funeral. Not too long to you're like, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. None of this matters. You can go soon.
Yeah. And that has an effect then on how you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
And how you see the world has a massive effect on the decisions that you make.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. My perception is almost everything.
Even though it's based on a lie, right? It's based on a lie. You don't know that yet. You don't see that yet.
Right.
And I guess that's the thing I think that most men don't like to talk about. Like, men don't want to sit down and talk about their feelings. We want to do stuff. We want to go throw axes or shoot guns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
we like to do that stuff too.
Yeah.
Are you in need of marketing help for your business or nonprofit? Do you have a company or organization that is thinking about hiring an in-house staff person to do your marketing, but realizing it's out of the budget to bring on someone with the right skills and experience?
If you need an expert to help you with any of the following:
social media, graphic design, website design, web hosting, public relations, video production, podcast editing, short form video editing, email marketing, search engine optimization, content marketing, grant writing.
Grand River Agency is here to help you amplify your message and get it in front of the right people.
Visit us on the web at grandriver.agency.
This is the Manlyhood Mancast.
Well, I mean, but I think that to be able to, that's what I love about seeing what you guys have gone through in the recovery, is that it opens the door to be able to talk about the stuff that you need to talk about, but that nobody will, you know?
Yeah. And I think that finding a safe space and finding the group of guys that, you know, fits your lifestyle. I mean, whatever that is, and really just going after it, you know, I know people who have traveled hours just to go hang out with people once a week or like whatever. And like, you know, and if that helps them and they're going to continue doing it, then cool. You know, it's one of those things that I was taught, you know, one of the greatest gifts that any addict can receive is the gift of desperation. And, you know, it's confusing, right? Because it's like, okay, well, you know, why would you want, you know, somebody to be in a point of desperation? It's like, well, we're survivors, man. Like, we will fight and claw and use every resource available to us to keep our addiction going, in whatever way, shape, form it is. And, you know, I say addiction because it doesn't just stop at the drugs. The addiction goes levels deeper. You know, and sometimes it's very insidious, you know, it comes out in very different ways. You know, I got into recovery and it was like, okay, cool, I stopped using drugs, but like, you know, I'm going to go work out all the time, or, you know, you can use women, or, you know, I'm going to use gambling and scratch off tickets. And it's like, you know, I went through all that. And it's like, you know, filling a void inside of yourself with anything other than filling it out, it's going to be for the worse, at least in my opinion. And what I found in my experience, you know, I tried to fill that void with everything on the planet, man. And, you know, there was really nothing that can, you know, I've heard it described before as like waves coming up on the ocean. And, you know, after a while, those waves kind of just break away at that rock. And the water comes and fills up those little holes. And, you know, but eventually that water comes back out. And that's kind of what like drug addiction is. And you're left with this rock wall with like a whole bunch of holes. And like, what do you fill it with? You know, and I think that's, you know, the individual's decision when you choose to do that. But you're going to have to fill it with something.
Yeah, the concept of trading one addiction for another is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We all do that.
Even something that might look like it's healthy, you know, that can easily become unhealthy if it becomes that obsession, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, you know, we talked about that a little bit beforehand, but really trying to stay in the middle of that road. If I'm on one end of the scale or the other, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we could have that conversation a little bit too, because we talked about like the idea of toxic masculinity, which, you know, I think most of us hate the word because of what it's become, right? Like, now the concept of toxic masculinity exists, but I think they use the word to describe it so that now the only time you hear the word masculinity in our culture, it's about toxic. You know what I mean? Like, they've just kind of conflated them. But why don't you talk to me about that, you know?
The scale?
That scale, yeah. Well, tell me what we were talking about earlier.
Just kind of a quick overview, you know, like characteristic traits, right? So if you got codependency on one end of the scale and independency on the other, if I am too independent or too codependent, it's a problem, right? Because if I'm too independent, I won't ask you for help. And if I'm too codependent, I need other human beings to do things for me. So the idea is I need to bridge that gap between the two and try to get as close to that middle as I can. Mm-hmm. It's I've found most characteristic traits are that way, such as like arrogance and pride, right? Like, I'm allowed to be proud of my accomplishments. I'm not allowed to be arrogant.
Right. And on the other end of that is like this, almost like a hatred of yourself. Like, you, both of them are thinking of yourself.
Self-pity is pride in reverse.
Exactly. It's still pride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that brings up a good point too with the interdependence part, you know, being that middle of the road, right? Like, I want to be with these people because we all help each other, you know, and that idea. And I read this book one time. It was called The Unbroken Brain. Started with an S, but he was talking about addiction as being like a learning disability, right? And I found that to be a very interesting concept, because it was like, it was talking more about the actual spiritual malady part of the side, you know, and basically saying that, like, you know, we as addicts kind of grew up in, like, you know, those circles where people used a bunch of drugs, and we never really learned how to socialize well, you know, we never really learned how to play well with them. You know, we could be around other people very well because we needed to use them to get what we wanted. But, like, to build those connections and those relationships that eventually lead into lifelong friendships. And, you know, we never grew up with that. You know, like, we didn't have them, you know, by our own design, of course, but, like, still. So, yeah, I thought that was a very interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Which kind of brings me up, you mentioned this earlier in our conversation, you know, when you talked about kind of working through recovery, how you found a family and you felt loved. And, you know, we've used the word love a few times. How does, and unfortunately, you know, English, we have one word for love, and, like, I love my pizza, I love my dog, I love my buddies, I love my wife. And every one of those is a completely different thing. What do you mean when you guys are talking about love and how it has affected your who you are?
When I tell another human being I love you, what I mean is I will never intentionally hurt you. And obviously the word intentionally is placed there for a reason.
I really like the way God lays it out, you know, and he's in Ephesians, when he talks about, you know, love is patient, love is kind, love holds no record of wrongs. Like I say, I got it on a big poster sitting in my living room to remind myself often, like, that's how I'm going to treat my wife. So it's like, it's like, okay.
You know, should have her get it tattooed on her face. Yeah. When you look at her, you see it, you know, love is patient.
I could remind her to love me like that. That's probably
closer to the truth. Yeah. Yeah. I think about like Hollywood has created so many myths around what love is. You know, you hear things like, well, love is never having to say, I'm sorry. Like, actually, that's like the worst. No, like, yeah, that's not love, you know, and love it.
On a weekly basis.
Yeah. Like, and you don't fall in love, you know, like, if you fall in love, you can fall out of love. And that's not what love is either, you know, but that's, you know, on the romantic side, but just even like that brotherly love, like, yeah. Like to look at another person and value them and see who they are and care, you know, like, yeah. I don't know why our culture has said that men shouldn't do that, you know?
So we moved one of my best friends 2 years ago. When we dropped him off, we got everything out of his car. His new landlord came over. And as we were leaving, we hugged him and said, I love you. And the new landlord looked at him with just the most confused look on his face and said, I've never had my friends tell me that they love me. And my only thought was, get better friends. You know what I mean?
Like, or be the one to say it. Right. You know? Like, I have friends who I tell them I love them, and they don't say it back. But they'll go, yeah.
And you know.
And I know what they meant.
Yeah, you know they feel that. It's just men specifically, I think the older generations you go back, the less we were told I love you, the less we were okay with saying I love you.
Yeah. Well, we would be like, I love you. No homo.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that was before hashtags were a thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. You remember just yelling Dave Chappelle quotes at each other?
Yeah, no, I was before Dave Chappelle, but yeah, I gotcha.
good days. He's coming back. So that's good.
Yeah, I saw his a clip of his comedy special, the Andy Kaufman joke. This was hilarious. And I'm hoping it doesn't get me canceled, but I'm going to share it anyway because it's hilarious. But he talks about he wanted to meet Jim Carrey, right? Yeah. And he had this opportunity to meet Jim Carrey when he was working on the movie where he was playing Andy Kaufman, the Man in the Moon movie. So he's playing, and I mean, Jim Carrey is nuts. And so to get into this role of this even nuttier guy, he was doing the whole method acting thing. And the whole time he shot the movie, he was in character. So like when he goes home, you know, he's still Andy Kaufman. He just pretended to be that. So he talked about how, you know, Dave Chappelle's like, so I go to meet him and I called him Jim. And my friend's like, no, you have to call him Andy. So this whole time he has to like refer to him as Andy. He has to look at him as Andy, but when he knows darn well that it's Jim Carrey. Right. Goes, and that's how I feel when I meet a trans person. You know, like, just the whole concept. And I don't want to get into all that, but Dave Chappelle is funny because he's willing to say it, you know, and that's.
Comedians always have been that way. Though,
right? Yeah.
Their whole job is to push the envelope.
Right. Well, I mean, and it's not just one side of the political spectrum, although what's funny right now, what's funny is usually what's offensive. So when things were more conservative in the 80s, you know, the 70s and 80s, you had, you know, like George Carlin, who was pretty left wing. And so he would say things that were offensive to that, you know, to that conservative crowd. And so now what's kind of the dominating culture is this very liberal mindset. So what's funny is... is what's conservative. What's offensive is what's conservative. Yeah, so it's insane. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very, you know, I mean, I get myself in trouble. I don't know if you guys do this, but I get myself in trouble because, like, there's always... I mean, my dad was a professional clown, right? Like, literally. Like, he was a birthday clown, you know? And all we did, like...
Learned something new every day.
Yes, yeah, he was amazing. And he would post a daily joke on his Facebook page, you know, and just he was funny. And so for me, there's always a joke. There's always something funny in every situation. Like, yeah. I have to not sometimes share those jokes. You know, you're talking with your wife and it's like the perfect joke. It's the perfect joke. She set it all up. You know, it's like the fastball down the center, and you know if you take the swing, it's going to be the funniest thing you've ever said, but not to her. Oh, so guys, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the questions that I like to ask all of my guests, and this I think in a room with two guys, this could take a little longer than it normally does. So what does it take? I'll start with you, Adam, or Marcus. That's pointing at the wrong one of you. I'll start with you, Marcus. What does it take to be a man?
I don't know. I was reading this like before when you sent it to me, and I'm like, I don't know. Cause like, I don't know. I do try to lead a little bit better life. So I don't like offending people, right? Like I don't, and I don't really know. I mean, I can tell you what the definition of what I've seen, what men in my life do. But, you know, it could mean different things to different people, I think. You know what I mean? Being a man could be stepping up and, you know, being a stepdad make sure all your bills are paid in the house or whatever, but you know, like that could be a mom's role too, you know, and like so. I don't know.
It's okay. I understand it. Well, let me ask the question different for you. Okay. Looking at your life and growing up, who were the men who spoke into your life that you can look at and say, "That's what I want to be," that really encouraged you
growing up.
Maybe not growing up. It's okay. It's okay if not growing up. But in your life, who were the people when you looked at, and what was it in them that you wanted, that you say, I want that?
Well, my father, for sure. My father is a great man. And, like, I wish I would have listened to him more. But, Yeah, and like he always made sure there was food on our table. He always made sure there was a roof over the head, He always made sure we had, you know, new sneakers to start school. You know, my dad worked a lot. He had a few different jobs, you know, he was a military man. You know, he's in Vietnam. He's a good man. He treats his wife with respect. You know, raised us kids to the best of our to the best of his ability. So my father, for sure.
Yeah. Are there things that you think that in your life you're doing a good job at modeling that you learned from him?
I do think so. You know, I treat my wife with respect. I always make sure to check on my friends, make sure they're okay, you know. Try to practice the principles that I learned in the program to the best of my ability. Yeah.
Adam, what does it take to be a man?
So this is the only question I actually read out of those three that you sent at the end, because it caught my eye. And so thinking about it, I believe my answer would be selfless service to God and to others. I think every honorable man I've ever known is capable of ripping your head off, but knew when to do so. When it was necessary and when it wasn't. And always, not that they weren't willing to fulfill their own needs, but always worried about other people's first.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I talk about a lot, like that ability. I remember being a kid and wrestling with my dad all the time, you know, and like his hand was just like, he'd put his hand around my face and he'd squeeze it just enough where I could feel that he had the power to crush me, but not so much that he was hurting me. Yeah. Like,
do you know why men do that with little boys?
Why?
It's specifically like father to son. Your as a father, one of your jobs with your son is to make sure they know what their limits are.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that definitely was a part of that. Mm-hmm. The other end of it was it taught me to respect him, you know? Like, my dad was strong, man. And I would do the same with my kids, you know? And then there's the day.
I have a question about
sure,
that.
Real sure, go ahead.
When you were little, how often did your dad let you win?
I don't think he ever did.
Really? And you still kept coming back for more?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there was a point when, you know, I remember being 5 or 6 and we're playing and I hit too hard, right? Like I sucker punched him in the face.
Yeah.
His glasses went flying. And I saw rage. And I knew I went too far. And he raised his voice. He didn't yell. He raised his voice and he said, "That was too far and we're done. And we're not going to play anymore."
Until you learn to control yourself.
Until you learn to control yourself. Yeah. So, and then tell another quick story. 13 years old, stacking wood, which by the way, because we heated with a wood stove. Stacking wood is the worst thing for a relationship between a father and a son. Every father and son I know who have a wood stove who would stack firewood, every one of them has this story in one form or another. Every one of them. So we're stacking wood. I get mad about something. I chuck the, you know, I think dad said, "Oh, it's going to rain. I can smell it." And me being 13, water is odorless. You can't smell rain. You know, then he fusses at me, you know, and I'm mad. So I'm huffing and I toss the log up. It falls down, hits his foot, bounces off of his foot and it hurts him. Next thing I know, I'm on the ground and it didn't hurt. There was no physical pain. I was on the ground, his hands around like my chin and his other fist is drawn back and there's fire coming out of his eyes. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hit me. He doesn't say a word. The neighbor comes over. "Yogi, don't kill him, Yogi. Don't kill him, Yogi." And I knew that if my dad wanted to end me, he could.
Well, my grandfather put me to sleep 3 times in my life, and I can tell you the things that I did before he put me to sleep, never did after.
I I'm not saying we should abuse kids. I'm not saying that, you know.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, but I do think that that learning that boundary of control yourself and then showing that he had control, mm-hmm. right? He was in control. He didn't hurt me. He like swept the leg and, you know, one time I'm an adult and my, you know, messing with my dad, sparring around in the living room, you know, and I thought my dad was like, he had just had two knee replacements and you could barely walk, you know, messing around with him. Next thing you know, he like hits me gently in every pressure point from my head to my knees. And like, I couldn't move just like Bruce Lee stuff. Like whoosh, I couldn't move, you know, I'm like 26 and I'm like, I will never mess with this man. You know, I will never mess with this man.
I had an older fellow once tell me, there's a reason I made it to this age.
Right. Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Dad always said, like, don't mess around with old guys because they don't care anymore.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, that's just kind of a fun side note. Okay. So you've talked about what it takes to be a man. Adam, I'm going to ask you again. We'll stick with you, then we're going to go to Marcus. You're able to get your hands on a flux capacitor and you plug it into your Nissan Sentra or whatever, you know, and you get it up to 88 miles an hour.
It's a Toyota RAV4.
Okay, so you plug it into your Toyota RAV4 and you get it up to 88 miles an hour. You leave the flames behind you,
yeah.
And you can go back, you know, about 20 years or so and visit 10-year-old Adam. What are you going to tell him?
Oh, that's simple. You are loved more than you know.
Do you think you would have listened?
Probably not.
Probably not. Did anybody try to tell you that when you were 10?
Oh, absolutely. So my being raised situation, I was raised by my grandparents. My mother had passed away at 7. And I was raised in a small town, and everyone in that town knew my situation. And so when I would go over to my friend's house, their parents would just treat me like one of their kids. You know, like, Adam, you can just walk in whenever you want, go to the fridge, you know what I mean? So I didn't realize how valuable that was. I think,
or how valuable you were.
Well, and I think the thing we sometimes miss in society is that idea of it takes a village to raise someone. You know, I learned a lot about business management from my best friend's dad. I learned a lot about construction work. I learned a lot about football from my head coach, who was, you know, family friend's dad. You know, working on cars, just all kinds of stuff along the way through other people's parents, simply because I was being raised by my grandparents. Quite frankly, they were probably just a little too old to chase around after me. So they just trusted the people that were around.
That's awesome. So you were loved even though you didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, Marcus, you can travel back in time and talk to 10-year-old version of you. What are you going to tell him?
Well, I know 10-year-olds don't listen. And I know 10-year-old Marcus really did listen. So I don't know if I would say anything. You know, I'd probably just give him a hug.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just showing love, I think, is very important.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, I think, so we as a society in general too, especially nowadays where like technology is so right at our fingertips. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, doing life with somebody is extremely underrated. I think that, you know, it's very easy to pick up a phone and say, hey, how you doing? Or, you know, whatever, it's, you know, tag somebody in something on Facebook, but it takes a little bit more effort to say, hey, do you want to go get coffee, or do you want to go out to eat tonight, or do you want to maybe have a game night, do you want to go watch a movie, do you want to, you know, just hang out and talk, you know. I think it takes a little bit more effort to do that, and I think that, you know, I mean, I think I would try to do that, you know, 10-year-old, so, yeah.
Good stuff, man. All right. What is your best advice for the men listening today?
So like to give advice because my advice might destroy your life. So
that's the best.
Yeah. It's true though. I've seen it happen.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of giving advice.
No.
The most I could do is a suggestion as to what I did.
Yeah. I can tell you what not to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hey, that's advice.
Yeah. Don't do that.
All right. Let's start with that. What your advice is to not do something. What is that?
Oh, man, all right. Don't do drugs. This should be number one up here. Don't do that. Don't give up any dreams. Chase after it. And also, don't give up any dreams.
I think that's good advice, man.
Yeah.
My suggestion would be develop self-awareness.
What does that mean?
What is self-awareness? That's what you're asking me.
Yeah, yeah.
Not very self-aware.
Developing an ideal of who you are versus who you want to be. And then run towards who you want to be.
I like it. Yeah, with being self-aware, it's so crazy how we are often like not aware of how we come across, of the things we're doing,
how I make people feel.
How I make people feel.
How I act. What do I do when someone makes me feel a certain way? All those things.
Mm. Yeah, so be aware. And then make adjustments, because it doesn't, if you know you're a butthole, you should probably, you're like, I'm aware that I'm a butthole, so maybe I should actually then work on it.
Right.
It's not just awareness, but actually work on it.
Yeah. There's actually a term for that. I think it's called metanoia. And it's a spiritual awakening, basically. And then,
Greek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awakening of the spirit. And I don't think you have to be a drug addict to just go through a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening. I think we as a society and people in general, we get wrapped up in the societal world and this, idea of we have to have the biggest house or the best car, or, the best clothes or whatever. And I think it keeps us down from what's really important, that feeling of inferiority and not feeling good enough.
God's never not provided the thing that I need. It's not always what I want. It's always the thing I need.
And it's very sad how little encouragement human beings need, but yet, we're so sparse on being very little. I mean, my wife tells me, hey, thanks for taking the garbage out. It's like, that is like the simplest chore in the entire world. But just like her telling me, hey, I recognize that you did this thing today. And like, yep. I appreciate you doing it. Is it enough to make me want to do it? I don't know. Maybe the next day. I don't know. But it's like.
You know why that works?
Yeah, dopamine.
Yeah. So what happens is you have good behaviors and bad behaviors, mm-hmm. right? And you have three things that you can do to any behavior. You can reward it, ignore it, or discipline it. Mm-hmm. If I reward a good behavior, it continues. If I ignore it, it stops. And if I discipline it, it stops. Mm-hmm. If I discipline a bad behavior, it should stop. If I reward it, it continues. And if I ignore it, it continues. So what that tells me is, A, it's a lot easier to continue a bad behavior than it is a good one. Mm-hmm. And B, if I want you to continue doing something, I need you to tell me, or I need to tell you that thing pleases me when you do it.
Mm-hmm. Gratitude is powerful, right? So your own gratitude, like when we express our own gratitude. Like, that physically, chemically changes your brain. Like, anxiety, like, they've proven, like, people who have anxious thoughts, those anxious thoughts go away when they express gratitude.
Well, and anxiety and excitement are the same chemical in your brain.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, giving, expressing gratitude yourself is good for you, but then expressing gratitude to someone else.
Here's an interesting
receiving
question for you.
Ask.
Do you think that God expresses gratitude towards us?
Gratitude towards us. Is he thankful for us?
On an individual, societal, and worldly basis.
Yeah. I think he does love us. And I think that so there is all kinds of favor and reward when you do the right thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if I do the right thing, I get God's favor, you know? And I know that, you know, the concept of God's wrath isn't popular to talk about these days. Nobody wants to hear, oh, God's up there throwing lightning bolts. But that is a real thing too, you know, because
the reason why I was sleeping under that bridge.
Yeah. And sometimes it's direct where it's like I'll tell you this story just because it's a real thing that happened to me. I was addicted to porn. Like, it was my life. Like, I did it all the time. Like, I was married and I was lying about it, which I think was worse than the porn, right? Was lying about it. And one day I was lying in bed and I don't know if I caught a flu or what happened, but my entire body was racked in pain. Like, I couldn't go to work. I couldn't move. I was racked. I was just like, it was like it would shudder from the soles of my feet all the way up to the top of my head. I was just shuddering in pain. And I heard a voice out loud say, if you don't confess this to your wife, I'm going to kill you. And, you know, that's something that's not popular to talk about these days. That sometimes God says, I'm going to take your life, you know, like, and that wasn't because he hated me. You know, I think I still had a relationship with him. I don't think he was going to send me to hell. I don't believe that. I believe that, you know, I was redeemed. I had been redeemed. I belonged to him. And he's like, this doesn't belong in your life. And I'd rather have you up here in heaven with me than messing up everything in your life, you know? And so, like, God's wrath is real. That's the direct version of it, right? God's judgment, God's wrath is real. Sometimes it's more like, if you do X, Y is the consequence. Like he doesn't even have to make it happen. It just happens, you know? If you eat Doritos, you will get fat and your knees will hurt. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, that's like, he doesn't even have to make that happen. That's just the brokenness of the world happened. And that's the result of that. But I think in the same way, there's a lot of like, if you do X, Y will happen in a positive way.
Yeah.
Like, I tell this story too. Like there's a story in the New Testament, since we're talking about God stuff, right? There's a story in the New Testament where Jesus is saying, like, if you bring your tithes and offerings into the storehouse, you know what I mean? Then the blessings will be poured out on you so much that it's pressed together, shaken together. And, you know, like if you had a bag of wheat and you shook it so that it all compressed and then you filled it up to overflowing again, you know, like the opposite of the Doritos bag, you know what I mean? Just completely compressed in and as full as you can get. Like, that's how much God will bless you. So I remember somebody gave me $20 and like, it was at church. So I just like pressed it in my palm when he shook my hand. And it was right before Christmas. And I was thinking, we didn't have a lot of money for Christmas presents. And in my mind, I'm like, I could go to the Dollar Tree and I could get 20 gifts for my kids. You know what I mean? And I just had this little feeling that was like, I gave you this to give to somebody. And so then like 2 minutes later, somebody walks up and they're talking and they were having a hard time. And we have always been faithful to tithe, to give 10% of our income to support the God's kingdom work, you know, which I know, like, again, some of our listeners are like, I don't understand any of this. You're nuts. That's fine. That's what we do. We give 10% of our income. And so like that part of that promise was given already. Like, we just did that. Then and we were poor, but we still did it, you know? And then the next part of that promise was your tithes and your offerings. So that's anything over that 10%. So I was just handed $20 as a test. Are you going to give this to somebody? And a guy walks up and he's in need. So I did the same thing to him that somebody did to me. I slipped it in his pocket. He didn't even know where it came from. He was expressing a need, not asking for anything, just saying, man, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I'm like, stuck $20 in his pocket. So he didn't even know it. Got home from church that night and someone had slipped underneath our door an envelope with $2,500 in cash in it. And I got two or three checks in the mail that week that I didn't expect from clients from projects I'd done that I kind of had basically said, this person's never going to pay me. And they were like, oh, we should pay him before the end of the year. So I got like another $1,200 I didn't expect from like different people that I just gave up on getting the money from. You know what I mean? All. And I honestly believe that was because God said, if you do X, Y will happen. So like, that's not the same as like the gratitude that you talk about, but like, I think it's part of it. You know what I mean? Like he was like, I love you. I got you. Thank you for doing what I want you to do. Thank you for being obedient to my command and my suggestion, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my life, God's always looked out, even when I thought he wasn't. And even when I had gotten myself into like the worst situations, you know, I mean, I did like 7.5 years in prison, and like the entire time there, I always had a good bunkie, you know, like I everything on the commissary list that I wanted to order always got in my bag somehow, you know, like it was just like the smoothest sailing possible, you know, that could have been, you know, I mean, even just being alive today, I mean, you know, I tried to not be here and God said, no, you know, God had other plans. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand how you couldn't think that God is grateful for us being here. I mean, the fact that we're even here, you know, talking about it. I mean, he could literally just snap his fingers or breathe or, and you know, we're gone. And so for us even being on the earth in general is by his own design and his hand on me. So yeah, because I think if he's not grateful for us, he's probably gonna let us know. You know, at least it's understandable.
I think he actually likes us. Like even when we're screwed up. And there's a Bible verse for that too.
Here's how I know that's the truth.
Go ahead.
So we had discussed earlier how I had been in recovery about 4 years before Marcus showed up. I think Marcus was 16th sponsee, and I had prayed for him to show up.
For him or for?
For him.
For him.
Because I needed someone to devote time and energy and love to.
You needed a friend that you could invest in and help. That's awesome. Yeah, I think when we talk about God, man, like I know that one of the things like in the rooms, right, in the AA is like they'll say, well, you know, like. They call it a higher power, and it can be whatever higher power you want it to be.
All the steps say God as we understand him.
Right, right. And I can respect and understand why they say that, right? Like I'm a Christian guy who has a podcast that's not a Christian podcast, right? So I get the cuts. Like I don't want to, if there's a Buddhist that's listening that's like, I don't understand any of this, I still want him to appreciate and understand it. You know what I mean? Even if I think he's wrong about what he believes, you know? But all of that being said, like who God is as revealed in the scripture, like I've seen that stuff proven true time and time and time again, man. Like you prayed and God answered it. You know, like I've seen people healed, you know, I've seen miraculous things happen over and over and over again. So for me, like, yeah, I have no doubts. I have a good relationship with my mom. Right? Like we're friends, we're close. Like I love my mom. Like I know what she's thinking a lot of times. I know what she's going to say, both good and bad. Right? Like I know, like if X, Y happens, I know how she's going to respond, you know? Try telling, you know, I can't believe she doesn't exist. I can't erase, like I can't just say I'm doubting her existence. Like for me, I can't. That's my relationship with God. Like I've seen it. I've seen too much. I can't ever doubt it, you know, right. And I'm not condemning anybody who doubts. I get it. Like, I understand why you doubt,
right.
but I just can't.
Yeah. And I think that's another big problem too with the world today. It's like, just because we don't agree on something doesn't mean that we can't be friends. You know, like there may be some ideas that you have that I don't, you know, maybe have no idea what you're talking about. And, you know, feeling each other out, and maybe your belief systems will never be lined up, you know, but that's okay. You know, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about that person, what they got, their belief system, how that works, and how you're similar.
Right. It's about being open minded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's, and that's the definition of what tolerance is, right? In a good way. Yeah. To be able to say, I think you're wrong, and I still like you.
Right.
It doesn't mean...
I'm still going to love you tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, like the modern definition of tolerance is, you know, I don't care whether I think it's wrong. I'm going to treat you like you're right about this, and I'm going to have to agree with you. And that's not tolerance. Tolerance is saying, I don't agree with what you stand for. I don't agree with your belief system, but I like you and I care about you. And I'm going to say you have a right to believe that, even if it's wrong.
Well, I think the last piece of it is we've lost that ability to communicate and negotiate, right? Like 98% of my life is just walking in and having a conversation with somebody,
mm-hmm.
right? I get to be open-minded. I've been surprised at the profound amount of knowledge I've been able to gain simply by listening to another human being.
You can learn something from anybody. I've got some guys that I've been hanging out with lately who are, one's on the spectrum, the other one's got some intellectual disabilities, you know what I mean? Guys that you would not, before, you know, a few years ago, I would have just been like, okay, come on, you know what I mean? And now I'm at the place now where I'm spending time with these guys and I'm actually learning from them. Like I'm seeing like, oh, like you see the, like, yeah, your brain might not work the way that my brain works. Maybe not even the way it's supposed to in some situations. Right. But you see the world differently and I'm learning from you and it's actually helping me and actually enriching my life. Mm-hmm. Like I would have never thought that. I was kind of biased, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to listen to that guy. Same thing with, like, we talked about addiction, right? Like 10 years ago, I really didn't know anybody in recovery, or if I did, nobody talked about it, right? And so 10 years ago, like I was asking those questions, like, why is Narcan free but I, you know what I mean? Like well, if they're just gonna do that, they should just go ahead and end it. Like that was the mindset I had. And then you actually meet somebody and you hear their story and then you care, and then you're like, oh, they're like me. It's just that they went down this path instead of this path. And now they're trying to get back on a different path. And if you had made this choice and that choice, or if you had this thing happen to you, you'd be in the same spot, you know? And it took a lot, like, that was actually a really humbling experience for me to learn that.
Well, recovery in general should be humbling. I mean,
no, that's the worst part,
right? Yeah. Well, and then, like, you think about it and it's like, well, what did I do with my life? Well, really nothing, you know, like I destroyed it. You know, like that's what I did. You know, and it wasn't until I was open enough to ask for help, to pray, to, you know, really be willing to want to change, you know, and at that point, you know, and then even then it was a struggle because 30 seconds later, I wasn't really so willing anymore, you know, and it was like, no, maybe I'm going to rethink this, you know, but yeah, it's
you hand somebody a book, tell them to read it, we're going to analyze the whole thing, and we're going to analyze your thought process. Some people, you know, no one does. The point is, I knew that if I didn't do that, I would die.
Yeah, and I don't really like, I don't want to knock anybody else's program or anything else to get some clean, like, whatever works for you, like, awesome. Like, kudos. If you got 24 hours clean, 12 hours clean, you got an hour clean, man, like, good for you. You know, whatever works. This just happened to be the thing that, worked for us. And oil is working for us, you know, continuously every day. And so, yeah, I don't want to, you know, take away from anybody else's recovery or whatever they're at in their journey.
And then just to kind of touch on the anonymity piece, the reason why we don't normally do things of this nature is because, say, 10 years from now, I get used. Somebody watches this and says, oh, program doesn't work.
Mm.
It's not the program that doesn't work. It's me. I stopped doing the things that I was taught to do that keep me sober. Mm-hmm. And that, I had a lot of experience with relapsing early on, and that was my experience. I stopped doing the things that I was taught to do.
Do you find that, like, going through those steps, like, do you have to kind of keep revisiting them as you move forward? Like what the ones, is it four that's a searching and fearless spiritual inventory? Did I get that one right?
Pretty close. Moral.
Moral. Right. So, do you have to keep doing that?
Do you know what 10 is? Yeah.
What's 10? That's why I'm asking. I only know a couple of them. I'm like,
so one, we admit we are powerless over alcohol or drugs in our life, they become manageable. Two,
can't believe we are greater than ourselves. People start us to say no.
Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him.
Four is we made a searching and fearless and wondering.
Five, we admitted to God, ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs.
Six was we made a list of all of our character defects and
Seven is connecting to God to remove them. I can't remember the exact step. It's always been like a
splitter. And for God to Then eight's the one we were talking about earlier about making a list of all the people we had harmed. And become willing to make amends.
And then 9 is making those amends.
And then 10 is continuous and personal daily inventory of ourselves. And we promptly admit when we're wrong. That part teaches us not to do wrong. That yeah. one. Because then we got to go up to people and be like, hey, like, I'm sorry I treated you like an asshole. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, right.
Can't keep you from being an asshole the next day.
Yeah. 11, self-prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood and praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out.
Then 12 is the guarantee. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we can carry the message to the guided sources.
And so then there's a whole list of principles that go on.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, 12 is pretty cool. You know, I've had the opportunity. God's opened some doors, man, in my life. I mean, we've gone into all the jails in the surrounding area and gotten to talk with people who are still struggling and, you know, kind of see where their stories led them. And, you know, we've been into the local rehabs. We talked at church, you know, and I mean, just the opportunity for a drug addict like us or drug addicts like us to be able to go back into the places which caused us so much harm, which, you know, we caused harm, but that were the environment that the harm was caused in. You know, I think, I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. You know, I mean, I'm a convicted felon, and I can just walk into a jail in Pennsylvania and be like, hey, I want to come talk about NA and God. And they're like, cool, come on in. Like, yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know how else to explain that. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate about both of you too, and part of the reason I wanted you on the cast is because when you guys tell your story about like the wake of destruction that was in, you know what I mean? Like the people that you hurt, the mistakes that you made, and how there was this wake of destruction. And I see, you know, this wake of the opposite now. Like I see that in you guys. Like I see the people who are being challenged, being inspired. And I think that, you know, every pain in our life has a purpose if we let it. Like you cannot let it, and you can stay in that pain, and you can let that pain, you can try to bury the pain, you can try to numb the pain, you can try to do whatever you want to do with it, but if you don't transform it into helping somebody, then it's just going to destroy you, you know?
Great epochs of a man comes when he decides to baptize his greatest liabilities into his greatest assets.
What's that from?
Nietzsche.
You know, Nietzsche's a weird guy.
Yeah, very much so.
He's very intelligent.
That doesn't mean I can't use.
Yeah, I've got later on in the season, I'm going to do, I don't know if you guys have seen the Manly Chunks of Wisdom where I take quotes from a philosopher or somebody. He's on my list. And I keep debating because I'm like, he's one of those guys where I don't agree with most of what he says. Sure, yeah. I'm like, man, like God's not dead. Like that's obvious. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I also know, like, that's not what he meant either. Like, that's not what he meant that God was dead. But
people start paraphrasing things. It always gets
right. Better. Right. But he's not my favorite philosopher. But there are things that he says, especially when you take a quote, right? And you take a chunk and you just look at what that statement says. Right. There's a lot of really good stuff in there.
So, like, you know, the old quote, what is it? Blood is thicker than water. Mm-hmm. That quote is actually, the blood of the coven is thicker than the water of the womb.
Right. So that's the opposite.
It's a completely different statement.
Yeah. Yeah. When you take something out of context, you know, or taking a portion of it out of context, when you actually look at what is being said, there's good stuff. And yeah, I like to learn from different sources as well. Like, I love, if you've read Sun Tzu of The Art of War, and there's such good, there's so much out there. And like, that's actually one of the reasons I like doing that, like the chunks of wisdom thing. Cause I'm like, most guys don't have time, or maybe they have the time, but they don't have the willpower to sit down and read a whole book. You know, and I get it. I'm like, man, I get bored after like 3 pages, you know? So, all right, let's pull out the good stuff.
Right. Yeah. I remember reading the Gulag Archipelago.
Rough.
Yeah. Especially chapter 2, but, you know, reading books like that and really understanding what it's truly like to live in a society where it's completely controlled and, you know, there's evil running about, really kind of makes you grateful for what we have going on. Even with everything going on in America and whatever, it's like, we're pretty lucky, man. Very lucky to have what we have going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I think of the stuff going on in our country now, like, I'll get like fixated sometimes. Like, I'll go, like, we talked a little bit about the conspiracy theory stuff. Like, I can get into the rabbit hole, you know, but then I have to remind myself, like, actually, so when in 2016, when Trump was running for office back then, I was so bothered by the way that everybody was so divided right before that
problem.
Like, just that constant butting heads, and you know,
it's a big problem.
And my crazy hippie friend was just like, dude, like, plant your garden, take care of your garden, love on your kids, take care of your neighbor. Yeah. You know, like what else matters? Like,
and the news isn't, I don't think, ever really that realistic, right? Because I can watch the most horrible things on the news, walk outside and find out it's probably not that bad, right? Like, my neighbor's still a cool guy. You know what I mean?
Focusing on what we can control, and that's it. Yeah, so that's what drives us crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the only person you can control is you. The only person whose decisions you can actually do anything about is you.
Yeah, you know? And if you can help your community, all the better. You know,
yeah, I can, like, suggest a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, yeah.
That means it's going to work for us.
But you can help. You know, you can help the people who are in that situation where maybe they can't make their life better, but I can help, you know, but I can't expect you to do this. I can't make you do this. I can't, you know, and there's a lot of freedom when you just kind of, like, you know what, the people that matter, who matters most in your life? Those are the people that put the most attention in it. Who matters most in your life, man?
That's a laundry list.
Well, that's all right. I know. Like, you don't want to leave anybody out, but
right.
I would start with God, recovery, fiance, stepdaughter, friends, family. I mean, I'm somewhere in like the 20s range, probably.
Right.
I give her on a daily basis.
Same kind of thing with you, right? Like, yeah like those people at that top of the list, I'm going to worry about more about them than I'm going to worry about the CIA, you know?
Well, yeah. Right. Yeah. And nobody ever really listens. You know what I mean? So, yeah. It's easier just to, focus on the little, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, guys, if some of our guys that are listening, because I'm sure that this is the case, that are guys that are listening and they're recognizing that their alcohol or their drugs or their food or whatever is a problem, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, they're starting to hit that first step right? And recognize that I need help.
That's a pretty good question.
What would you guys, what would you tell them to do?
Go get help. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's pretty simple, right?
Yeah. Right.
It sounds simple.
It's not, right? Because, like, as an alcoholic and a drug addict, I will like I said, I was homeless, couch surfing, doing all this stuff while I was trying to figure out if I was an alcoholic or a drug addict.
Right.
Like, I spent that 2 years figuring out that the last time I drank, if I could make it 3 days, I'd stop obsessing every 20 minutes. Mm. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't suggest taking it that deep.
So if you think you might have a problem,
probably get some help.
Go get some help. Mm. What's the worst that could happen, right?
Right.
Well, I think the other part, too, that always gets forgotten about is the parents, the families, the moms, the wives, the sisters, the brothers, the husbands that have to deal with it. And my advice to them is always love them from a distance. Yeah, my parents loved me and enabled, and they didn't think they were, for years, and they thought they were just loving me. And it wasn't until the day that they said enough, and then they wouldn't allow me back in my life, that I was ready for the challenge. So
if somebody in your life is struggling, and you know it, you should draw some boundaries.
Absolutely.
And you can still love them and say, no, you can't. We can't continue this relationship the way it's going unless you get help. And that's sometimes the one thing all that it took to make the person actually realize they needed help.
Yeah, my whole family, it's like, you can't be around anymore. We're not driving out to Bradford to pick you up. We're not doing that. You know what I mean? Like, we're not coming to get you for the holidays. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. And that's a painful thing and a hard thing.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And looking back at that, like, I wouldn't use the word resentment, but somewhere in that tier felt really, hurt by that. Right? And looking back at it today, like, that's what they had to do. Mm-hmm. And we have a wonderful relationship now.
So unconditional love doesn't mean
enabling.
Right.
And you can enable just by not calling it out when it's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's like you just can't let them in your house. You can't let them continue. You can't give them a lifeline. They have to figure it out by themselves. All of us addicts do. You can love us and love us and love us until there's nothing left of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth.
Guys, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today. I think this was some good stuff. Anything else you want to share with us?
Thanks for having us on.
Awesome.
Thank you for your time.
I really appreciate you guys, and I'll let you know when we get it on the air. Guys, if you are out there and you think you might need help, you probably do. And if somebody you love needs help, let's hook them up.
Yeah.
If that means cutting them off, cut them off so they can get the help they need.
If you're in the Bradford area, we have a helpline for NA. All these services are online for any area.
Yeah, it's likely if you're in any area, you can Google some helplines, meetings.
And also the SAMHSA helpline. Good resource there as well.
Awesome. We'll put some links in the show notes to some resources too. So if there's something you guys need help with, hey, look, do it. Hey, if nothing else, just reach out to, us here at Manlyhood, and we'll talk to you about it. See if we can help you find somebody that can help you walk through it. So thank you guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Sam. You.
Gentlemen, I just wanted to thank you again for sharing your story with us, for walking us through what the 12 steps looks like. A lot of us may have heard that stuff before, but maybe never really thought about how it applies to somebody's life. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate that you guys are real men and that you work hard to help set people free. And I thank you for coming on our podcast and sharing it with our audience. Guys, if you are out there listening to this message again, I just want to say, if you need some help, there's all kinds of resources. If you've got a hang up, there's somebody that can walk you through it, because I know too many people that have let their addictions kill them, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs. Hey, food. That's my struggle. I'm working through that myself. Whether it's porn, you know, I've seen marriages destroyed. I've seen children's lives destroyed. I've seen the carnage that addiction can cause. And I just want you to know, you don't have to suffer through it and you don't have to stay there. You can change, and there is hope. And these two guys are a perfect example of that. So if you need some help, let us know. We'll get you plugged in with something. We'll find you a meeting somewhere if you need it. But I just want to let you guys know that. Remember, guys, this episode today is brought to you by Grand River Agency. We do marketing for whatever your needs are, for small business, for nonprofit. If you need a website, if you need graphic design, if you need help with social media and keeping up to date with that, if you need a really good, comprehensive, well-thought-out marketing strategy, that's something we're good at. So if you got questions about that, get in touch with us at grandriveragency.org, and we'll help you out. Anyway, guys, I really appreciate you. I appreciate you listening. Please don't forget to share this episode with somebody. Men, if you want some community, you want to connect with the guys, go to the Manlyhood Man Cave on Facebook and send a request, and we'll get you added to the group. If this episode touched you in any way, let us know in there. We want to be able to walk you through what's happening, and you don't have to go through it alone. So let's do it together. As always, guys, I love you. I'm proud of you. And I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Manlyhood Mancast. If you want to be a better husband, father, leader, a better man, you need to join our private Facebook group, the Manlyhood Mancast. Join today. Please help us out with a like, comment, share, and subscribe. And check us out at manlyhood.com.